You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Now that we've opened the cold open.
And cracking open a cold one with the boys.
Yeah. You're listening to Haunting the Studio, a podcast about horror and music and all things that orbit those two points, across genres, styles, and nations. We're your guide to all things musically spooky. I'm Tyler, joined by my co-hosts, Andy and Nick. How are we going today?
Oh, doing pretty well. It's that... Oh, no. I just realised that, like, we're recording this two, three days before Halloween. It is not going to come out until well after the fact. But right now, spooky season is in full fucking swing.
It's very spooky.
It is very spooky. I'm very unsettled.
Well, now that you've given away the magic of the show, you've pulled the curtain up and revealed us to be an old fat man playing with joysticks.
I mean, we
cut this, right? We're not going to cut this, though, are we?
Okay. We aren't.
Cool.
Yeah, sorry to, you know, we don't do the radio show anymore, in case anybody was still confused. It's been a
yeah, we're recording this. We're recording this in October 2020.
Yeah.
All right.
Original run of the show.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Time.
Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah.
Anyway, how have you been?
How have I been? I've been pretty productive, pretty busy. Which, you know, could be good, could be bad. Could be here or there.
Mm.
Yeah.
And lastly, Nick, how are you doing?
We're getting there. We've been renovating a storage unit for just clearing it out, mostly, and making it semi-usable. So, a lot of ivy, a lot of dust, probably a lot of asbestos, but that's only going to bite me in the ass in 40 years or so we're golden.
That's what you want to hear. You want to hear from your job like, oh no, don't worry about it, I'll get you in a few decades, but you know, don't worry about it.
Yeah, just enough time for the boss to cark it so that nobody can be held responsible.
Yeah, well, exactly.
The perfect crime.
I don't have foresight for 40 years. I don't even know what I'm doing for dinner tonight.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when that's the case, how could you possibly worry about what happens in 40 years?
Yeah, of course.
The future hasn't happened yet.
Yeah,
that's for much older me to worry about, and to hopefully not go bankrupt, because I don't know what the fuck the you know, neolibs are doing, but I have a feeling that they're going to be, you know, coming for every fucking government.
All right. excellent. I wanted to hear.
That's the promo.
Yep. And what have we been listening to lately?
Well, you know, I love supporting New Zealand music. I've been listening to a shit ton of Aldis Harding. She is amazing. You know, she kind of grew up like in the folk scene of Aotearoa, and now she's working primarily with the producer John Parrish, who you may know from working extensively with PJ Harvey. She's got a number of albums out now. My favorite of hers has been Designer. Just had that basically on repeat. The production is amazing. Thank you, John Parrish. The songwriting is just impeccable. Absolutely, you know, everything that I want kind of from an album. You know.
Hell yeah.
Highly recommend.
Hell yeah. What about you, Nick?
I've been listening to a few things recently. I've been getting back into The Origin of My Depression by Yeboah, which is like a noise and dark ambient project.
Fucking incredible.
I wasn't won over by it when I heard it as it came out, but I'm starting to turn around on it now. I've also been listening to The Body. I think the album is called I've Fought Against It But I Can't Any Longer, which is a power electronics and very harsh noise project. It's very grim. It makes me feel warm inside. I've been listening to Speeding Bullet to Heaven by Kid Cudi, which is not great, but it's not as bad as I was led to believe these past, 7 years?
What I can say is that it is a dramatic tonal shift from the other two things you've been listening to.
It's not that much of a shift, really.
Okay.
It's a dip in quality, but...
understatement. Is the body the one that you got on cassette? The one with the, like...
No, that's 72%, which is,
not even close.
Yeah, you're way off. that's some math rock that I picked up. Instrumental math rock, I think. I just didn't want to have one cassette in my collection. I felt like a bit of a fake fan that way.
Mm.
I don't even know where my cassettes are right now. I've got a bag of them somewhere.
They're literally right here. Right there.
I was thinking about the bag I used to keep them in.
Legendary moment.
Yeah.
I mean, it just happened, but I'm saying it already.
I'm just currently looking at my Midnight Oil tapes. Right next to some kind of, I think, dark ambient project. I'm not sure what the one next to it is. Anyway, I've been listening to a little bit of a band called Pull Down the Sun. They're a New Zealand project whose soul out there, their debut, which has just come out fairly recently, has a concept album based on Māori folk myth.
Oh, hell yeah.
The descriptors I've seen given to them are a mixture of Deftones, Gojira, and Isis.
Oh.
So it's very much got a kind of very progressive, very atmospheric at times.
And just making sure, because you said Isis and there's a bit of ambiguity, you know, we do
it's
mean...
the Islamic one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the... Yeah.
Yeah. ISIS. It's ISIS, the terror organization. Mm.
This sounds like a pretty dope album. Have you chucked this in the... If you haven't already, you should chuck it in the show Discord.
Yeah, I will get around to that at some point. I was listening to it kind of over the weekend while I was driving around, and it's pretty goddamn good driving music. A lot of fun. I've also been listening to a lot of Strike Anywhere, who are a circa 2000s, quite left-wing, melodic, hardcore, post-hardcore sort of act.
Oh, like Green Day.
Oh! Oh my God. Don't make us regret inviting you here.
That blew out so hard.
I will refrain.
We're looking at the waveforms. I blew out both with one reaction.
They're gonna hear it, Andy. You don't need to tell them.
It's fun to look at, though, and they can't. This is not a visual medium.
You're correct. I just feel like they don't need the visual sense to know that fact.
Haunting the Studio, coming at you in 3D.
That's when we get around to haunting YouTube.
Haunting the Twitch stream.
Yeah, exactly.
Haunting Live Leak.
Oh, no. that is pretty haunted already. We don't need to join them. They've got that task cut out for them. I've also been listening to... I guess I'm a bit on an indigenous metal kick at the moment. Or at least Polynesian metal kick, because I've also been listening to a Tahitian black metal band, Teruki. They released a great EP a couple years ago, and they've just released their debut, Mariko Teruki, and it fucking rips. It's so good. Love their fusion of black metal with traditional Tahitian music. It's so fucking good. And the last thing that I can think of that I've been listening to is this album called Return to Forever by a band called Romantic Warrior. They're a bit of a It Came From YouTube album. They just kind of popped up one day and had to listen to it. 70s jazz fusion, prog rock jazz fusion. Very, very good. One of those... It's that particular kind of where you've trained the YouTube algorithm just right and it just kind of spits out albums that have about 100 listens at you. Mm. And they're just almost always good or at least interesting.
Which is why they don't have any views.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it is very good. Return to Forever, very good album.
Did you say Tahitian black metal?
Yeah, so from French Polynesia.
Oh, nice.
Indigenous French Polynesian, Tahitian. Today, we're being torn to pieces, put back together, and resurrected by one of extreme metal's most recognizable bands, Death. And what better place to start than their immensely influential debut, Scream Bloody Gore. While we could look earlier to their highly sought-after demos, or go further back to the Mantis-era demos, or indeed go further forward to their tech death days, it's here in 1987 with the release of a full-length, studio-quality album that we find the Death that would continually evolve over the coming decade. Before I go into the album info, this is both of your first experience with Death, am I right?
Yeah.
If I've heard the Halo theme, does that mean I've heard one of the riffs from Mentally Blind?
You might be right.
It's there. It's 100% there.
This is going to be something for us to look into later. Alright. So, there's a question of where to start our narrative, because the early days of Death were highly unstable, marked by short hiatuses and frequent lineup changes. Broadly speaking, Death began as a band called Mantis in late 1983, founded by its only constant member, Chuck Schuldiner, then 16 years old, alongside guitarist Rick Roz and drummer Cam Lee. The band recorded a number of demos, culminating in the 1984 Death by Metal demo, before splitting up in September 1984, before refounding as Death in October and resuming their prolific tape recording, putting out the Reign of Terror demo and four live tapes by the end of 1984. So between October and December, they released five separate demos.
Wow, short turnaround.
Yeah. The next 2 years would see a slew of live touring and demo recording, leading up to another hiatus in January 1986, while Schuldiner rehearsed with Canadian death thrash act Slaughter. I don't know if either of you ever listened to Slaughter, but they're quite good. I will continue on. Here is where we'll start kind of nailing down the exact details. So upon resuming Death in March 1986, Schuldiner recruited ex-Burnt Offerings, a Californian thrash act, drummer Chris Reifart, and resumed recording as a two-piece. The pair recorded the 13th and final of the band's series of rehearsal tapes before recording the Mutilation demo in April, which caught the ear of legendary independent metal and hardcore label Combat Records, and secured a contract for Scream Bloody Gore. In November 1986, Schuldiner and Reifart recorded the entirety of Scream Bloody Gore in a small studio in the band's Florida heartland. However, the mix was too poor for release, and the studio flew the duo to California to record it again in Los Angeles. In LA, the band were joined by producer Randy Burns, and were overseen by executive producer Chief Steve Sinclair, the manager of Combat Records. Neatly settled in LA's Music Grinder studio, the band worked with Burns to finish the album, which would come out in May of 1987. Now, Burns is that guy for this album. He has an impressive back catalogue of credits, which by 1986 already included Hellstar, Megadeth, Leatherwolf, Dark Angel, Slizzy Borden, Suicidal Tendencies, and Possessed.
Jesus.
And before you ask, Andy, yes, we have encountered Randy Burns before. He produced Seven Churches.
Mm. Hell yeah. One of the other... we'll get to it.
Yeah, we will get to Seven Churches once more at some point. Album art came courtesy of thrash metal art mainstay Ed Repka, who, and this is just a fun fact, would go on to do the model design for the Hellraiser franchise.
Oh, hell yeah!
Yeah. Burns also provided additional percussion work. So after Scream Bloody Gore's release, Reifart departed to found the seminal California death metal act Autopsy, another one that we will be getting to at some point, while Schuldiner will return to Florida and recruit a new lineup. So some final notes on the album itself. Over half the tracks were inspired by or dedicated to horror films of the late 1970s and early 1980s, so in chronological order of those films coming out. They were Zombie Ritual, inspired by Lucio Fulci's classic 1979 Italian zombie film simply titled Zombie. Regurgitated Guts was another Fulci zombie film, the 1980 film City of the Living Dead. Torn to Pieces was 1981's Italo-cannibal film Cannibal Ferox, directed by Umberto Lenzi. Evil Dead, in name of Sam Raimi's 1981 demon freakout film of the same name. Beyond the Unholy Grave pulls from yet another Fulci flick, the 1981 Italo-Southern Gothic supernatural horror The Beyond, and the title track itself is inspired by classic 1985 Lovecraft adaptation Reanimator, directed by Stuart Gordon. It is also worth noting that many tracks had previously appeared on the various official and unofficial demos, with Beyond the Unholy Grave going all the way back to the 1984 Death by Metal demo, Infernal Death and Baptized in Blood both appeared on the 1985 Infernal Death demo, Mutilation alongside Once More, Beyond the Unholy Grave and Baptized in Blood appeared on Book from the Dead in 1985, Zombie Ritual and Evil Dead appeared on the rehearsal tape series along with live tapes. As far as I can tell, Denial of Life, Sacrificial, Regurgitated Guts, Torn to Pieces, and Scream Bloody Gore were all written for the album. And with that, what are our initial thoughts?
Interesting that you say that a lot of the songs here are featured on or inspired by classic horror films. Is that a constant throughout Death's catalogue?
Not throughout Death's catalogue. It's probably the case that there's at least one or two songs like that on Leprosy, their next album, but from Spiritual Healing onward, as the band progressed into more technical forms of death metal, they also started to veer away from horror as a subject for the lyrical themes.
It does feel like some of the later works are a little bit more cerebral in tone almost. It sounds familiar with the limited amounts that I've heard from Cynic, more so than, I don't know, close to the Misfits, for example.
Yeah, and that's no accident that you're hearing that, because two Cynic members worked directly on the Human album, which was the album that kind of really properly sent death down a more technical path, and it also was the point at which their music became a lot more introspective, which is a word I see a lot for their Human Onward albums. Very introspective and lyrical theme.
Mm.
What about you, Andy? How did you feel about it?
I am kind of not surprised that they came from Florida.
Yeah.
Like, there's just something about Florida that they just, like, seem to, you know... I know that, like, Cannibal Corpse aren't from Florida. They're from Buffalo. But, you know, no wonder they made a home for themselves there. No wonder Marilyn Manson came from Florida. Ugh.
Yeah, I know. There's something about Florida. I mean, there's a reason why one of the earliest regional death metal scenes was the Florida scene. Mm. So many bands came out of there, with, you know, Cannibal Corpse being their kind of gross, rotting flag bearer.
Scream Bloody Gore definitely feels like a very solid foundation for some of the sounds or some of the songs that they would work with on their later albums. I did end up listening to Individual Thought Patterns, I believe.
Love that album.
It's pretty good. It's pretty fucking great.
Yeah.
I think, personally, I'm a bit more won over by what they've done later on, but hearing some of their later work definitely gives me a better appreciation of what they were doing on Scream Bloody Gore, and also how they evolved and how they pushed themselves.
Yeah, and I think that's something you can say for pretty much Scholdener's entire career. He also had a band in the very late 90s called Control Denied, where he continued to pursue technical experimentation. It's just one of those really unfortunate things that he passed away when he did in 01, because I would really have liked to have seen what he could have done if, for example, he reunited with some of the people from Cynic, like around the time when they reunited in the early to mid-2010s. Seeing a fully developed Cynic in the 2010s working with Scholdener again would have been really cool, but at this point it's one of those counterfactuals. We just can't know what would have happened.
Mm.
Yeah, it's, you know, I didn't do it. I kind of wish that I did now, though. Go back and listen to a whole lot of their early demos, you know, when they released most of their music.
Yeah, well, there's, I don't remember the exact numbers, but there are about 13 rehearsals, about a half dozen sort of demos that were made for going out to, you know, being sold, handed out at gigs, yeah, that whatnot. And I think there's about 8 live demos. So between them, that's a hell of a, for what, 3 years essentially, because they only got together at the very end of 83 as Mantis. It's a hell of a release schedule.
But yeah, I would have loved to have, like, you know, because Randy Burns was a producer for this album along with Chuck, and also Randy Burns did Possess Seven Churches, which we covered on the original run of the show. Brilliant album, you know. It'd be interesting to compare the earlier demos with, you know, see how Randy Burns might have influenced the sound a bit. Is there were 2 years between Seven Churches and Scream by the Lady Gore?
Yes, yeah, there are.
Yeah, because if I remember right, Seven Churches was 85.
Yes.
Was 85, and
Scream Bloody Gore is 87.
90, yeah.
And then you've got another 2 years again before you have Cannibal Corpse's release. And by the time Cannibal Corpse has their first release, Eaten Back to Life, that's when, you know, death metal is kind of a fully fledged thing.
Yeah, yeah. 4 years of its, like, you know, nascent period. Did Randy Burns work with Cannibal Corpse as well, or...?
I don't believe so. I didn't check what he did after working on Scream Bloody Gore, but I don't think he's ever worked with Cannibal Corpse.
Yeah.
I'm not super familiar with a lot of old death metal, especially, but I do hear that Death is the band that started the name death metal, or coined it effectively. So is this one of the earliest, or perhaps the earliest death metal release out there?
It's pretty close. People argue about whether Possessed Seven Churches counts. You could argue that Seven Churches is more of a thrash metal album. It's definitely part of that extreme metal petri dish we talk about, where, you know, all of those genres together were in a bit of a soup. Your black metal, your death metal, your thrash metal, and also grindcore as well, are kind of in this soup percolating together before they begin to emerge distinct from one another. You also have, off the top of my head, you have Scream Bloody Gore, of course, in 87. You also have Macabre's first album comes out in 87, and Necrophage's debut comes out in 87 as well. So there's a bit of argument, because all three are death metal staples, highly influential on the later scene. Death more so than others, but, I mean, Macabre and Necrophagia, we could easily do episodes about just based on their influence on the later scene. So, yeah, death is often attributed with it, with Scream Bloody Gore. I mean, Scream Bloody Gore comes out relatively early in 1987. I think, you know, the real argument is kind of about which of those, you know, super early demos really has it, but it's one of those things where I don't know if you can ever really pin down an exact answer.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's super useful to pin down an answer. I think it's more useful to kind of have these bands in mind that are all kind of influencing each other as they build towards, you know, more substantive careers, and the influence kind of spreads out through tape trading circles and whatnot. They definitely, via all those demos, those rehearsal tapes, those live tapes, the demos they actually made to give to label people and to hand out at gigs and whatnot, because they were just so prolific making them, a lot of Death's demos spread pretty far in the early days, so there was that influence, absolutely. People were hearing Death who weren't just in kind of like the local area where they were.
I mean, not that you asked me, but personally I think of Seven Churches as being the first death album. Like, when I hear it, I hear more of a thrash and death album than a death and thrash.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, like, you can get so far in the weeds of trying to sort these things out, because then there's also, like, the death thrash scene and the blackened thrash scene, and, you know, it gets to a point where there's kind of there is still some use value in trying to pull these things apart to see what kind of influences lead up to a certain band's works. But there's also like a lot of splitting hairs.
Mm. That is interesting, but I didn't ask you, so I'm going to ignore what you said.
Choice.
Well, for what it's worth, I actually agree. Personally, my personal opinion is that I think Seven Churches is the first death metal album. But it's also the case that Possessed, I mean, they released Seven Churches, they released that second album, and they released an EP, and then they kind of just disappeared for a long time.
A really long time.
Yeah, they didn't, like, then their next album after those three was their comeback album, which came out in, like, 2019 or 2018, which is a really fucking good album. But that is a long time, and so their influence was quite residual, rather than being a living thing that continued through the 80s and into the 90s. I think, onto the album itself, I get what you mean about it being foundational, because, you know, like, this album rips, personally. I really like this album for how thrashy it is, because I'm a huge thrash, I'm more of a thrash metal fan than I am a black or death fan. But, like, even at this early stage, I think you can hear that they want to do something different to what's around them at the time. I think when we get to Celtic Frost, who I definitely want us to cover at some point, because I absolutely love Morbid Tales and To Megatherion, I think we'll be able to talk a bit more about kind of that early extreme metal petri dish and the stuff that had this very direct influence on the birth of death metal and those other extreme metal genres.
I definitely recommend people check out, if you're going to listen to this album, I would recommend checking out the original 1987 release, as opposed to, there may have been more reissues, but the one I heard first was the 2016 reissue. And I think that's why I possibly didn't get into it at first, because it sounds very flat, it doesn't sound especially dynamic. Especially when you get to the later tracks in the album, in the latter half, where the sound gets a little bit more expansive and it's a bit more atmospheric. The reissue just squashes all of that out and compresses it, and as a new listener, it makes it a little bit hard to see, at least from the 2016 reissue, what made this group special in the first place and what makes them stand out among other death metal that's come out since then.
Yeah, I mean, there is, like, because I'm pretty sure the 2016 reissue was also a remaster, if I remember right. That I'm willing to be wrong about.
No, that's what I meant, sorry.
Yeah. I'm constantly annoyed by reissues of albums that feel the need to remaster them when it's not necessary.
Mm.
There are plenty of such cases, and it can, like, the effect it can have is, I think you're right, for, like, a new listener, if, like, a remaster is just not done particularly well, if it kind of results in the band's music being undersold, then, you know, it can kind of become more of a stumbling block to a new listener getting into an album than being something to kind of help them into, you know, a new artist that they might not previously have listened to. And there's also a flip side of that. I mean, the reissue of the remaster of the first Macabre album greatly improves it, because the first two Macabre albums, the mastering work is not exactly good. Even if the songs themselves are pretty good, but they sound pretty demo quality. So it's not to say that, like, remastering is always a bad thing, but when it's not handled well, and it results in a mix that sounds worse than the original, it's, you know, it's just such a headache.
Why bother, you know?
Yeah, it just seems like making more work and not really getting anything out of it, or making something worse as a result.
It happens a lot in films as well, like, a whole lot of, like, it happened with, when we tried to watch Hellraiser that one time, all of the, like, you know, audio, you know, speaking is all super quiet, so you kind of got to turn it all the way up, and then, like, a music stinger happens, and it's, like, breaking the sound fucking barrier.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounded kind of is the sound barrier. That metaphor didn't really work.
I think it actually worked fine. You just kind of overcomplicated it.
Anyway, it's shit.
Oh, I love Motorhead, though.
I've listened to the Motorhead.
I've listened to the Eddie and the Snaggletooth.
Yeah. Eddie and the Snaggletooths. Oh, no, wait, that'll be Snaggleteeth.
Judas and the Priests.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's a fun thing. The plural of a proper noun is always a regular plural, so it would be Snaggletooths.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Hence, Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, that doesn't sound right.
It doesn't, but it actually is.
Oh, I don't like that.
Yeah.
So, with this album, you have, like, what we've talked about, we've kind of talked around the music a bit, and there's a reason for that. It's because this album has such a legacy to it. You've got to kind of situate it for a start, and you've always got in the back of your mind the place it has in the development of extreme metal, death metal in particular. And also, the fact that later on the band would kind of refine their sound in a more technical direction. You're kind of listening to it, but your mind is kind of wandering and thinking a little bit about, where did the band go from here?
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just bringing up the track listing.
Yeah, on the topic of, like, you know, the actual music, like, what were some of your guys' like choice cuts, favorite moments, standout tracks?
Zombie Ritual is...
Oh, I was gonna say Zombie Ritual too!
Not twinsies.
You can both say it.
We both say Zombie Ritual.
Say Zombie Ritual.
What was it that really caught you for Zombie Ritual?
The line, vomit for a mind, maggots for a cock.
Yeah, that'll do it.
You know, that was, you know, listening to it, you know, the first time I listen to albums, I generally don't read the lyrics at the same time.
Yeah.
I just kind of let the, you know, full sound just be what I'm, like, focusing on, because, you know, later on what I end up focusing on hugely are lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
I love you know, in-depth storytelling, you know, descriptions of things that, you know, when the lyrics meet with the music and you hear the picture that they're painting, both sonically and also poetically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the albums that I tend to hold on to the most are the ones that have strong musical elements but also in, you know, stories. It was Zombie Ritual was the first one that I was kind of, you know, when I was starting to focus on, all right, well, what are they actually saying? That, you know, there was imagery that just stands out. It's not, I think Cannibal Corpse takes things way too far.
They definitely go much further.
I think Cannibal Corpse is the reason why I don't intuitively go to the lyrics for death metal first. I sit in and I let the sound wash over me, and then eventually down the track I'll get into the lyrics. Just going back to what you were saying with it painting a picture, I remember hearing the song I Come Blood and thinking, yeah, I don't want that picture.
That was always my favourite Cannibal Corpse song, though.
It's the one where the humour comes through the most. It's one of the ones where the humour comes through the most.
Humour, it also fucking slaps. Like, it was the Cannibal Corpse song that I was like, oh, you know, this is, you know, my friends are super into it, and I was like looking into them, and it's like, oh, you know, look at this huge box set. It's got so many albums. It's got so much shit with it. And then I kind of listened to it, and I was like, yeah, I'm not buying that. I'm not. Why would I buy that? You know, not that I usually, my dad always says this thing with a lot of the shit that I listen to. Just why would you want to listen to something that sounds like that? Cannibal Corpse is, yeah, just sometimes I do think that. But no, nah, it was I Come Blood was the song that like really fucking
won you over.
Okay, they have worth.
They're speaking my language.
And that language is hemorrhagic ejaculate.
Is that a metal band?
No, I think it's a password to get into one of the common rooms in Hogwarts one year.
That's how you get into the. That's how you get into the
into Slytherin. That's hemorrhagic ejaculate.
That's the other forbidden part of the library.
Yeah, it's the porno section.
That's where you find all of the
students that got held back a couple years.
It's where you find where they hang all of the forbidden Hogwarts porno grind tapes.
God, imagine being in the like fucking Harry Potter universe. Like wizard drugs must be fucking just next level shit. Like half of the shit, like half of the lollies that they sell look like they're fucking, you know, mind altering shit, and they're selling this to kids.
Hoggo grind.
Hog grind.
I'll grind your hog right here, buddy.
Pog grind. It's when you sample Twitch chat and then use that as like a cyber grind type beat.
No, it's when you fucking sample January 6th insurrection.
Oh, I'd love to hear like a cyber grind album that included just a bunch of incoherent yelling from January 6th.
Yeah.
That'd be so good.
I'm not wrong in thinking that the guy that was, like, the pog face guy was, like, involved with that in some way. Or, like, did he support it?
I think he was pro January 6th. Something like that.
Okay.
Anyway, wild aside.
But yeah, so, going back to the album. For me, it was Zombie Ritual was, you know, when I started listening to the lyrics, that was like, yeah, I fully see. Oh, that's right. I was saying, got onto Cannibal Corpse. Cannibal Corpse takes things extremely far. I'm not going to say too far, because I don't think it's too far.
And there are bands that have gone further.
Oh, yeah.
You got
yeah.
your, like, your Morticians, etc.
Yeah, your Guar.
Pissgrave.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm partially, personally quite partial to Infant Annihilator, where it takes it very far and it's very extreme, but it does have that sense of humour which can ground you and you sort of look at it and say, oh no, this is fun and this is funny and I'm kind of along for the ride.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas it feels like Death are taking this in a much more serious direction.
In a lot more serious direction, but like they don't take it so far that it becomes a hindrance.
No.
It's
yeah, it's we're like kind of calf deep in the guts. We're not like wading right up to our necks.
We're pog deep, I'm sorry.
God fucking damn it.
Yeah, the other thing is yeah, when it comes to like I kind of think of this album in phases almost more so than songs, because I was talking to Nick at least off mic a while back about the kind of final leg, the final kind of trio of songs on this album picking up. I mean, I'll throw that to you, but I kind of agree with you on that one.
I think I tried listening to this album 7 or 8 times, or at least started it 7 or 8 times, and I've listened to it through properly maybe 3 or 4, and for most of it I was thinking, I just do not get this. I do not get what they're putting down. I'm not sure I'm really into it. And this most recent time, just before recording today, it clicked. I do think there's a bit of a lull, personally, in the middle of the track list. It just feels like, especially knowing where they go to and the sounds that they're managing to make, I listen to Individual Thought Patterns immediately afterwards, and I'm struck by the high end, I'm struck by how clean it is, I'm struck by how tasty the low end is, and coming back to Scream Bloody Gore, it's not quite fully formed yet. I feel like Torn to Pieces,
yeah.
I feel like Torn to Pieces is the point for me where it really starts to pick up. I think if we're talking about favourite tracks still, I'm going to throw out Evil Dead. Sound play in the beginning. I love how atmospheric it is. I love how it gives the album, for me, a much needed change of pace. It feels very dynamic. I think that's the one that stands out the most to me, but everything from then onwards is
the last track.
No, because there's more than it's not just the last track, is it?
Evil Dead, then Scream Bloody Gore is the last one.
I've got more than that. I've got
What about Land of No Return?
I've got Land of No Return and Beyond the Unholy Grave. Did I do a fuck?
No, I've done a fuck. I'm listening to it. I've listened to a different version to you two.
Oh, fake fan, Tyler.
Yeah. Yeah, I might double check that because I think. Because I'm pretty sure Beyond the Unholy Grave is one that came out on a different version.
Beyond the Unholy Grave and Land of No Return were CD bonus tracks. I didn't realize that either.
I'm a listener to the Rich Man's 8-track. I'm sorry.
Rich Man's 8-track.
So what's the...
I think Land of No Return came out in a demo as well.
What's the final track of the original track listing then?
So Scream Bloody Gore. Final track of the original track, yeah, is Scream Bloody Gore.
Okay. Well, it definitely picks up from Torn to Pieces to Scream Bloody Gore. I think Scream Bloody Gore is... they have on the CD version are also pretty good. I love the doomy riff that leads into Land of No Return. It's a very welcome and very lovely change of pace for the album.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes when you just, like, you get a version of the album that's not quite the original version of the album, it's got a couple extra tracks or whatever, and it just picks the album up.
Mm.
I mean, we found that when we covered Misfits, was the version, the Die Die My Darling version, was the one that all three of us listened to, and it kind of was the thing that itched it over the line, because I think if I remember right, Die Die My Darling wound up being one of the favourite tracks for all three of us.
It was so long ago.
I like Black Acid Devil.
You don't fucking lie to me.
Fucking lie to our face.
I like inflicting Black Acid Devil onto people.
It is...
Not that much is true.
I have definitely been inflicted. but it has kind of, like, changed my life. Nick introduced me to the concept of cringemus. And what was it that I got for you again?
A bright pink neon vinyl of Mother of All Motherfuckers by Green Day.
You're welcome.
It sits there, unopened, unlistened, and it will stay that way.
Yeah, my favorite.
Inshallah, that is how it will stay.
Yeah, I also what was it that I got for you, Tyler?
You got me a Slipknot vinyl single.
Sorry,
was it just a vinyl single?
Well, it was a. It wasn't just a vinyl single. It was a patterned vinyl single with the album cover on it.
It was actually
a picture disc.
It was a picture disc.
It was a picture. That's the word I was looking for.
It was duality.
Did you get?
I took that one back. Actually, I
was going to say, did you get Tyler that, or did you give that to Tyler to give back to you?
No, I like gave it to him legitimately as a like joke present. But like then I was like, I kind of wish that I'd bought that for myself. And the next day I went, also Tyler's reaction was incredibly visceral, that like, because like my favorite thing about Cringemas is the moment when it goes from like, oh, you shouldn't have, to, oh, I wish you hadn't have. And that was, I've never seen a human being so disappointed.
I don't even really hate Slipknot that much.
It's the fact that it was
it was the fact that it was a picture disc 7-inch, which like you kind of got to go out of your way to get.
Are you more of a Stone Sour fan, Tyler?
Do you prefer
The Wall?
Don't even get me started. Oh, don't even get me started.
Yeah, actually my preferences are Nostalgia Critic's The Wall.
Doug, okay. If you're listening.
Okay. Hey, Doug. You should. If you listen to this, you should do another famous concept album.
Yeah. Why don't you take a big fat fucking shit on Ziggy Stardust?
I want to hear Nostalgia Critics 2112.
Anyway, Cringemas. Yeah, I got a Black Acid Devil on silver vinyl.
Okay, we're just fucking around at this point.
Yep.
We're 5 minutes over.
Oh, okay. If we're fucking around, when do we find out?
Oh, we're about to find out. Yeah, so Cringemas aside, I think we're kind of, like, united in opinion that this album is a kind of... It's a waypoint. It's a marker in the direction of where death would go in the future.
It's watershed.
Mm.
I'm never sure... Because that just sounds like a toilet watershed.
A watershed moment is like a very important moment in something.
Yeah, which this album is, but also it sounds like a toilet. Water closet, outhouse.
Oh, right. Funny puku. This album.
Oh, no, this album does not sound like a toilet.
That's for when we cover Gwar. Yeah. So we're kind of like, we united in opinion that death had... further to go. I think the place where I diverge from you two is if death kept doing what it was doing on this and on Leprosy, the album after, I would have still have been pretty happy. I mean, I very much appreciate the work that they put out in the 90s, but if the work they put out in the 90s had still sounded like Scream Bloody Gore and Leprosy, you know, I would have, you know, appreciated that.
I definitely would have appreciated it, but I'm not sure if I would be as into it as I am with their later works. I definitely prefer the technical tech death direction or the borderline prog direction. I'm not sure if there's much of a delineation between tech death and progressive death metal.
They're not really. They blend into each other a lot. I mean, their later stuff also gets tagged with mellow death a lot, melodic death metal.
Oh, yeah.
Which is correct, although I think what you think of when you hear mellow death, like, the sort of the gimmick, the bit that Metalocalypse is founded around, you know, the idea of kind of the melodic death metal band who claim to be the most brutal band in the land, but they're a mellow death band. And I think any extreme metal fans will kind of know what I mean when I say there's a particular kind of sound that you have in mind when you hear the term mellow death, and that's not really what you're getting out of mid-90s death, even though it is on balance kind of a correct correct
it's very melodic death term. Metal.
It's the same as like when you say metalcore, I at least think of the stuff that was around when I was in high school that was called metalcore. I don't usually think of the 90s era stuff. I'm not thinking of Converge, and the 90s era stuff like Converge I do like, so you know,
like the good shit.
Yeah, the good shit.
Yeah, so not Suicide Silence.
Yeah, so exactly, not Suicide Silence,
not Attack Attack.
Not Attack Attack.
I tore my trousers when my sister was over. Because
doing the crab dance?
Yeah, yeah. We were like listening to Attack Attack, and like Tom got up and he was doing it, and I like got up to do it too. But I was going to do it really dramatically, so I like lifted my leg as if I was going to like jump over the coffee table, and then just like brought it down, and there was just this almighty rip.
You popped a sack, bro.
It fucking tore. And my immediate response is to go, oh, not again! Because I tore a pair of trousers at my friend's wedding.
Listening to Attack Attack.
Yeah! No, it was playing Garden Jenga. It was, like, I was, like, squatting, and I was, like, you know, like, for fucking 45 minutes playing Jenga. And then it's, like, after the, like, you know, I lost every time. But, like, it was, like, we'd finished, and, like, I was watching, you know, Midane and Adam clean up all the pieces, and I was, like, oh, I guess I should help clean up. And I, like, bent over slightly, and just the entire ass exploded.
Yeah, so I think we're getting into the weeds a little bit, talking about Later Death. This album, it rips. If you are into tech death, then it's a very interesting album to go back and listen to see where tech death would emerge later on. It's a bit like listening to those really early Cynic demos.
Even if you have a passing interest in death metal as a style, I think it's worth checking out and getting into.
Yeah,
it's very well performed, it's very well produced. It goes hard, but it's not
well produced if you get the right version.
This is true.
Yeah, it's like listening to those early Cynic demos. It's, and you're right, yeah. Even if you just have like a passing interest in death or even extreme metal, it's a fascinating album to go back to and listen to see where the important points are. You have, you know, that point in 1985 where you have that Possessed album, and you also have, like, at that, by that point, you've got kind of like a build-up of these Death and Mantis demos. You've got 1987, where you have Death, Macabre, and Necrophagist releasing albums all at once. You have, and you know, I could go on, there are all of these points that keep coming up where you have kind of the development of death metal as it emerges from the extreme metal soup, from the petri dish, from the swamp, whatever you want to call it. From the extreme metal, you know, the primordial ooze.
The primordial ooze that is Florida.
Mm. And, yeah, it is a fascinating thing to kind of go back to if you haven't, even if you just haven't listened to it in a while. It's an interesting exercise to go back to it. And it also is, like, a definitionally almost a horror album.
Yeah, definitely.
There's so much influence on this. You know, we brought up lyrics very briefly earlier on, but, you know, this sounds like if you just were looking at the lyrics, there are definitely points on this that read like where death metal would go, in a different direction to where death would go, but in a direction that many death metal bands would pick up and run with.
Yeah, and definitely that they were, you know, paying homage to horror films, you know, rather than just, let's write a gross thing to be gross.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah, this kind of situates itself in that, it situates itself in the horror genre. And I think that's something that's really important for us as a podcast, as we try and nail down this idea of horror music, is finding these albums, finding these releases, finding these artists who we can kind of definitionally say, this release, this is horror music right here. This is a definite example that we can point to. And I think Scream Bloody Gore is a fantastic example of that. If you're just a general metal fan, go out and listen to this album.
Mm.
Have a listen to it. And also, go out and listen to some of their later albums as well.
Yeah, I'd love to cover some of their later works on the show in the future. So maybe if you keep listening,
putting
on my smug voice.
Yeah, I mean, I, for one, would love to cover Human at some point, because I'm a huge Cynic fan.
Big Cynic fan?
Huge Cynic fan.
Why are you so cynical?
But I think we're kind of coasting toward the end of the episode. We've been recording for quite a while at this point. Do you have any final points to make?
Don't listen to the reissue. The OG slaps. The OG sounds really good. There's no reason. Just,
we've moved beyond the need for a reissue. Yeah. Humanity has moved forward.
Mm. Yeah, it's always great to go back and listen to, you know, who were the forefathers of, you know, genres? So, you know, you go back and you listen to early, you know, industrial, or you go back and you listen to, you know, early punk, and maybe you end up in Motown and
early post grunge.
Yeah.
Early post, I hate that.
Well, yeah, it's great that we've finally been able to cover this album when, you know, years ago we did, years ago we covered Possess Seven Churches. Maybe in the future we'll cover Necrophagus.
Yeah.
I reckon that it's only fitting.
Yeah, and I mean, we're definitely going to have a dalliance with Macabre again at some point, because it's almost impossible not to. With the topic of the show, and yeah, I think we'll leave it there. Our final word is just go out and listen to this album. So that's going to be us for this episode. As per usual, you know, I hate to do the spiel every time, but it's kind of the only way to get it done. Find us on any of the different social medias. If you're interested in the Discord, message us on pretty much any of the social medias, and I'll probably just huck you a link. It's nothing really particularly exclusive at the moment. And when it comes to whatever podcasting app, whatever streaming service of choice that you're listening to this through, chuck us a review. If it's something that you can comment on, leave us a comment. If you want to get in touch, if you have suggestions, if you have questions about albums we've covered, questions about albums we might cover, if you just have, you know, a music hot take that you want to hit us with, hit us up. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You can find us any of those.
If you want to fact check us because we said something that was wrong.
Yeah.
You know.
Send those to Andy.
Abuse me with correction.
Yeah, and if there's anything else you're interested in, hit us up, if you so please. But yeah, we'll leave it at that. You've been listening to Wanting the Studio. The next one we're covering, which we have planned out ahead, we do planning ahead, is we've got a special little double episode planned. Not going to spoil it just yet, but we're taking a very drastic change in genre, and, you know, maybe one of the things you could message us is a little guess as to what we're going to cover.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.